Yes, it's finally time to discuss yet another Star Wars story. We're doing Solo, a standalone, for the most part, Star Wars prequel film, but that's not related to the other prequels.
Wow, it feels like just 6 months ago that we reviewed a Star Wars movie.
Yeah, that's a big thing. So I'm Frank, I'm joined by Pete and Pope, and we're going to talk about Solo. This is a pretty divisive film, I feel.
I think everybody is shocked that the name described the gross.
Oh, I guess we should lead off with the bad news at the start. Solo is, I think, profitable, but not as profitable as Disney thought it would be.
I think they're saying it's profitable in that it's making more than production cost, but as we all know, there's those hidden advertising costs that double the cost of the movie every time.
Right, and so
it
far
may not make.
Yeah, it's apparently the first Disney Star Wars flop. We're not going to be spending the entirety of this review just talking about the bad press that Solo's been getting recently, but we do want to address the bantha in the room.
Yes.
What I'm noticing is, like, the advertising leading up to the movie, you know, the trailers and stuff like that, did not showcase Solo enough. Like, I still have a hard time remembering the lead actor's name and have had to repeatedly look it up. It's Alden Ehrenreich. Is that it?
That sounds right.
Yeah. Sure. So, like, I keep having to look up his name, and, like, I don't feel like that should be necessary, especially for a Disney movie, especially for a Star Wars movie. Like, I should know him.
Yeah, I tend to avoid trailers when I'm not being forced to do a trailer dump, even though I still see Star Wars everywhere when there's a mainline story coming out. I don't feel the same way about Solo. I do feel like most of them kind of buzz by me.
Yeah, I think this suffered from coming out of a very front-laden summer movie season.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, they moved Avengers Infinity War forward by a week to give Solo more breathing room.
And it may not have been enough.
It didn't work.
Right.
Because I don't think you ever got that level of hype and excitement for this movie.
We will revisit all the potential bad news for Solo a little later in the show, but I think it's worth discussing the movie on its own merits right now.
Absolutely.
Solo is, to give a little bit of background for people, Star Wars is a movie franchise. Now, to give a little background on people, the way the Star Wars franchise is moving forward, so there's a main Star Wars saga.
Episodes 1 through 9.
Yeah, exactly.
And maybe eventually beyond that, but for now, supposedly, it's going to be stopping at 9.
Right. And then the relatively new thing that Disney's version of Star Wars has implemented is these Star Wars stories. These are more or less standalone stories that don't really move the major plot points of the saga forward, but are like a snapshot of something that is of interest in the background.
Yeah, certainly filling in the gaps that may not have been, like, thought of before, but, like, certainly, you know, things that are briefly mentioned in other movies they can build upon.
Before this, the first one was Rogue One, a Star Wars story, which told the story of how they stole the plans for the Death Star, which is something that was mentioned in the original movie, A New Hope, but never really explored.
Right, and these stories seem to be one of the gimmicks of them. They're laden with Easter eggs for the rest of the Star Wars universe. and for the most part, they're a place where you could kind of experiment maybe a little bit with the storytelling because you're not necessarily tied in with the Skywalker saga. Mm. This is our only second venture into a Star Wars story, so we're kind of taking it with a grain of salt that's the objective.
We're still learning what it can be.
Right. I think one of the interesting things about Solo was how many different kinds of movie it was. So let's do a quick ranking of it. It's an origin story for Solo, more or less. I mean, he's already kind of a street punk by the beginning of this thing, but we get a little bit more of how he became ace pilot Han Solo. Mm-hmm. Right? We get elements of his name and all the other stuff, his relationship with Chewie, a lot of the, even to a certain extent, his dress, his gun. A lot of these are just how he became. It's a superhero origin story, but with maybe not quite a superhero in the lead. And I think that was fair enough. Some of the stuff was really interesting. Some of it seemed just a little bit gratuitous and maybe not necessary. But, you know, it's one particular set story. On the other hand, it's a heist movie.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of. it's a heist. There is a heist going on in this movie.
Yeah.
But it's not really like towards the end, it gets a little heisty when there's betrayals and script flipping. And I enjoyed that part, but it was a little, it's right on the edge.
Yeah. I think those people that were told that this is going to be the Star Wars version of Ocean's 11 would leave feeling let down.
It falls a little flat
as a heist movie.
Yeah. Ocean's 11, a little much on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not bad, but if you were going in hoping for a heist movie, that's not what you got.
Our main characters never really lost the upper hand, which I feel like is a big thing, that there's always like the deck is stacked against you. Whenever there's a heist going on, that like there's always like that point where you really just have to slip right around whoever's like, you know, right, holding whatever you want.
Well, there's definitely a misdirection element in heist movies, and there is a bit in this, but I think there may be one or two different little elements of misdirection. That's with Emilia Clarke's character, who is the love interest, best way of putting it, into this movie. With Woody Harrelson's Beckett, who is also kind of like this big father figure in this yep, story. But it comes light and low. It takes a while to get to that point.
To be clear, I don't really have a problem with that. I frankly like the fact that element is even introduced into this. This movie is trying to be a lot of different things, and it does a decent job at doing most of them.
The closest thing I have as a problem with that is that it is not necessary, depending on what you came in on the movie with, not honest about it. Again, you walk in on this saying this is the heist movie, this is Ocean's 11, you're going to walk out going, this was not. Yeah. This is not at all that thing.
That's where I benefited from not caring at all what this movie was going to be. Mm-hmm. Saying, this movie is going to be what it's going to be, and I'll like it or I won't.
Right.
I did not go into, I want to see Ocean's 11 in space.
Well, I feel like it, like, going back to the origin story thing, like, I feel like Han Solo starts to become, you know, the jaded smuggler that he becomes throughout the rest of the Star Wars saga. You know, like, you get that little inkling of, like, the idealist within him dying, which, you know, places him where he should be, like, where, like, it goes from him being the unfamiliar character to him shooting first, because that's what really happened.
Yes. All right. Right to the end. So what do you think, Pete? You seemed like the...
I kind of disagree on that. I don't think we see the idealist in him dying. I think we see how it's left smoldering under the skin. I think we see the development of that crust, but the fact that he's never completely able to shake his desire to do the right thing.
Yeah, I think you're kind of both on the same ballpark here. But yeah, you're right. So one of the questions I've seen a lot of people talking about a lot about this film is that there's we don't really see where's the narrative arc, where's the story. This is a character we know where he ends up. Mm-hmm. Right? Let's be blunt. We know the entire storyline for where he goes through in terms of the saga and where he ultimately ends up. So prequels are always kind of divorce of animus, of forward motion in the plot. Because you don't really, like, it doesn't matter. There are no consequences. That's what a lot of people might suggest. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's true either. I think Rogue One is a perfect example of a story that we know where things are going, but has a lot of forward motion. But I think it's also true in this one as well. And when people question, like, where is his narrative arc? Where does he go? I think Han starts off as a grinning, smiling, happy-go-lucky guy, kind of, in a horrible situation, going from horrible situation to a horrible situation, but always still kind of being positive. And as a result of the only element of this film that is truly heist, I think the moment of actualization for Han is when he shoots first. It's the last one of the last things you see in the movie, and it's certainly powerful from a fan point, from a narrative perspective. The question of the first thing we really see Han Solo do in Star Wars is shoot Greedo first. The big debate over who has ownership of the canon for fans has been, did Han shoot first, and how that changes his character. And ultimately, it is answered by Ron Howard in this film by having him unequivocally shoot first a friend, kill a friend who hadn't even successfully drawn yet.
Frank, I want to equivocate that.
Okay, go for it.
Because I actually, I think it doesn't put the debate to rest. I think it leaves the character of Han Solo as a cold-blooded killer way up in the air. Because they make a distinct point that he does not shoot until after Harrelson has taken the safety off the gun and shown that he's ready to shoot.
Oh, I don't want to... maybe I gave you the wrong impression. Yeah, I'm not suggesting that... I'm not suggesting that this defines what is quintessential to Han Solo, which is he a good guy or is he a bad guy? I don't think that's the case. I think what it does is it gives us the Han we've seen, at very least in New Hope, a little bit in Empire, that Han who we don't know where he stands exactly. I think that's where we're left with, and that's what's important.
Yeah, I think it maintains the mystery.
Yes.
And I think it gives us a new round of fodder to talk about.
Absolutely.
Because you do have that thing. It's like, okay, is he a cold-blooded killer because he knew Harrelson was going to eventually betray him, so he acts first? Or was this a shot in self-defense because he knows Harrelson is a cold-blooded killer?
Right.
And he knows what's coming next.
Going back here, I feel like we can acknowledge that this movie is also a Western.
Oh, okay. Because
look, like that is a duel. Like they're standing there in duel format. There is a horseback train robbery.
There's definitely a frontier going on. Like, this is not part of the real saga. This is somewhere out in the edges that don't matter.
Yeah, I couldn't call this a Western, but it's definitely heavily influenced by the Western.
Yeah, whole spaghetti aspect of...
Robbery.
Gunslingers, train robbery, new frontier that no one's explored before. It's, it's certainly fun in that element.
Right.
Gravity wells.
Yes, Gravity Wells, card playing.
Kessel Run.
Yeah, absolutely. So speaking of Kessel Run and Gravity Wells, let's talk about a little bit, like maybe we could do some roses and thorns, things that we really enjoyed that helped us move the story forward and some things that maybe we had some problems with. I'm going to go with a very simple one. As far as an origin story is concerned, the only part of Han's origin that I really ever cared about was how he met Chewbacca. And this delivered well for me. I like the idea that the whole idea that Han rescues Chewie has been with us for a while. I want to say since the holiday special, probably before that. I don't know. Maybe comic books. But it's been there for a while. This life debt that Chewie maybe owes Han or whatever. It's a trope. It's the dashing hero and his, I hate to say it, native friend who he saved, his Wookiee Friday. It's fine. It's whatever. But this story kind of flips it a little bit. You've got it definitely from Han's perspective this entire time, where Han was about to be killed and Chewie saves him as much as he saves Chewie in many ways.
Correct.
And I love that partnership gets built on that. But at the same time, credit to the actor, to the actors involved, including our new Chewie and to Howard, you still get this vision and Kasdan's script. We forget that Lawrence Kasdan wrote the script on this, or the screenplay on this, that you still have a Han Solo who respects Chewie. So he knows Chewbacca's language. He speaks Wookiee. Right? That means a lot. Like, and I know that that's been something that's been established since the original Star Wars, but in this context, as being part of an Imperial army invading this planet, the one guy who says, well, we're really the bad guys here, and happens to also know the native language, and, asks Chewie questions about how he's feeling and about his family and respects him when he tries to save the Wookiees who are slaves in on the other planet that they end up going. Like, all that informs the character of Han Solo in a wonderful way and informs that relationship, that fundamental relationship between Han and Chewie.
That was nothing of the fact that Chewbacca comes back after freeing the Wookiees.
Yes, it was spot on.
Two ways.
Spot on for me. That was a wonderful moment.
I feel like there's... a certain character's origin that you're forgetting about that I really felt very important to was the Millennium Falcon. That, we got the mythical bet where he won the Millennium Falcon finally, which, I felt like that was something at least that kept me in anticipation the whole movie, where I'm like, he's got to win it, right? Like, they're not going to end this movie with that, because then people will come back and never watch a side story again.
Like, also, like, he doesn't just win it in the way that we've told he won it. There's a game in there. There's a misdirect in that, too, for the audience.
Well, mm-hmm. Yeah, it changed from the original. I believe it was originally supposed to be a dice kind of game, and in lore it changed to being a card game. But,
oh, I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about losing and then winning and then losing.
Exactly. But it was certainly impressive that instead of what you would think of his character being a scoundrel and he would have cheated, that he literally stopped Lando from cheating and won by chance.
Yeah, there's some interesting there. There's interest in there. See, when you said origin of the Millennium Falcon, I thought you were going to be talking about that the droid, who is another amazing part in the story. What was it, L3?
Yeah, L337.
Oh, ooh, the full name. A cool character introduction. A neat little fun thing. A droid liberation droid. A droid who's inspired by... I mean, slavery has been a thing in the Star Wars universe since the prequels, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. Barely since the prequels. It's really awkwardly handled. In the prequels, it's sort of like it's an emotional drive for Anakin, but everything is a little ham-fisted in those prequel movies. So it never really feels like it's truly addressed as a consequence in the world until Last Jedi, where it's kind of brought in, like, this is a problem. This is a thing we've established in our Star Wars fantasy that we have to deal with in some way. And here it kind of gets dealt with, again, not too heavy-handed, where in Last Jedi it was extreme. This one was kind of fun, but also cool. And I like that L3 donated her brain to the Millennium Falcon. It was tragic, by the way. I will acknowledge that, too.
Continuing on with the Millennium Falcon, let me say, when Force Awakens came out, I was conflicted about the square radar dish on the Millennium Falcon. And I think there were a lot of people that were upset about changes being made to the iconic Falcon. I thought this movie did a great job because when we first see the Falcon, it looks vastly different from what we know. And I think this did a great job of underscoring the fact that the iconic, quote-unquote, Millennium Falcon that we got to know was a very limited snapshot in the ship's life.
Long, you know, torturous life.
That the Millennium Falcon's identity is very fluid, and there have been so many modifications to it.
That is interesting.
Yeah. And I didn't even realize, I was trying to figure out, is Han going to, like, run it into a post and cave in?
I think that gap. I think that does happen at some
point. Well, no, it was the escape pod that Lando. It's like, they told us at the beginning of the movie what that was, but you didn't realize. They talked about Lando had an escape pod installed.
Yes, that's awesome.
And it never even occurred to me that, oh, okay, that's what they're going to jettison, and that was the escape pod, that missing piece.
Yeah, that was a very cool part as well.
But I like that. I think that was, they did a very good job establishing that.
Well, speaking of Millennium Falcon and bets, we got to talk about Lando. Donald Glover did an amazing job. When he first, and it's not an impression the entire film, but when he first speaks, it is unnerving how much he sounds like Billy Dee Williams. And his mannerisms and his personality, I think he really did capture a moment in Lando's life that we really only heard about. We've never actually seen, at least not in film.
Yeah.
Dynamic, interesting character, like his relationship with L3 and all that could potentially mean. I thought he was a wonderful, wonderful addition to the cast.
Good to meet you, Han.
Oh, so nice. The intentionally mispronouncing Han's name is wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. Another visual thing that popped in my head that I really liked. What is it? Madam something, the crime boss from the planet?
Proxima.
Madam Proxima,
I think it was, or something like that.
No, you're right.
I love the design of that. I love the concept. I love the giant slug that's sensitive to light. Thought it was cool. I liked the way they did Solo's name. I like he has no people. That was one. Oh, you didn't like that?
I thought that was a little heavy-handed. I was like, why can't his name just be Solo? Why do we need an explanation?
I see that. I don't think we needed one, but I think it was kind of cool that we've never really seen how the Empire's mechanisms work. Finn gives us a little bit of a window, but even that's very obscured. This one just felt like, at this point, it felt like we were watching, for that brief moment, the movie felt like it was MASH. or Catch 22 or something like that. It was like the meat grinder that is war and the Empire. And I liked how that
scene was definitely was good. But I mean, he knew his father. They established his father worked.
Oh yeah, you're right.
Building the ships, he knew his father. He
looks like we're going to get a prequel movie about why he no longer want to acknowledge his father. I guess because he just broke through the TSA line and maybe doesn't want to admit to who he was.
No, that's actually a good explanation.
Yeah, good enough in any ways. So, what do you think about Emilia Clarke's character in this? That was one of my issues. I think she did a wonderful job of portraying subtly the confliction she had when she was betraying Han, but I feel like she had a story arc that we weren't allowed to see. Like, she had an arc. Things happened to her character, but it all happened off screen, and then she lied about it the entire time she was on screen. You know, that was weird to me. It was like she definitely was there only to serve the purposes of Han, which felt like maybe a missed opportunity, although I am not pretending like I would be the kind of filmmaker who would be able to manage a way of doing it.
I'll be honest, if the movie was called something other than Solo, I'd be more pissed about it.
Yeah.
I mean, this is clearly Han's story. This is clearly something that we're supposed to be getting from his point of view. So I don't mind. I think narratively you had to obscure everything of her arc. Plus, it's great fodder for future novels.
Right, yes. Or the novelization of this was going to be kind of interesting. I do think that, like, if you look at the film and just look at her performance as the character, who kind of, like, so on her shoulders is show that this, that there's, like, a lot has happened to Kira, was it? Kira during the last few years. But don't tip your hat on what it is. And then make people feel like afterwards that they weren't completely cheated, that they had been led astray, that you are, in fact, like, effectively a double agent. Great performance, but yeah.
I feel like she was a true double agent in that I'm not really even sold on which side she was ever on at the end. Like, I don't know if what she did was for her or for him at the end.
Yeah, I definitely feel her, but I could see that.
I don't necessarily feel that it's for her.
Really?
I think there's a good chance that the way she saw it was, she's already trapped in this life. And by acting the way that she does, by doing what she does, she can keep Han out of it.
That's interesting. That's really interesting.
I think there's always a degree of self-interest involved. But I think this is mostly to keep the boy that she loved, who may or may not be the man who's in front of her, but to keep the boy that she loved safe.
Mm-hmm. Let's get a little less heavy-handed. What about the Kessel Run? That was something that was, everyone wanted it to be explained in some fashion, probably for decades, to be honest. But as soon as this movie was announced, definitely. What did you think of how that was portrayed?
I mean, I feel like I saw it coming a mile away, though, where they, you know, like, you knew it was a 20 parsec run, and, you know, obviously they're going to have to do it over the course of the movie, and, like, I feel like it was kind of spoon-fed to us. Like, I liked most of this movie, but this was like, all right, cool, I see this coming. All right, cool, that's how it pays off. Yay.
I always thought this was a question that never needed answering. I always read the Kessel Run 12 parsec line as a example of Han talking out of his ass.
Oh, really?
To be honest. You know, he doesn't know what the hell he's talking about. He's supposed to be a great pilot, and he's making claims that use the wrong units of measurement.
So this is where my reading changes as I age. Originally, I read it as he did it really fast. I didn't know what a parsec was. Yeah. And it was fine. And then, which is probably what was intended.
Mm-hmm.
And then after I found out that there was something wrong with it, I was like, oh, I guess he could just be bragging, or it's just bravado. And then eventually somebody flew the theory that it was, in fact, you know, something like close to a black hole, or he did it where there was a super shortcut that didn't exist. And I'm like, oh, all right, those are all cool theories. But at that point, it was like, all right, fandom, you're going crazy. I appreciated seeing it in this movie. I think it was done pretty well visually. I think, you know, they hit the right pacing, and there was a lot of consequences to it. I liked right after the prison break and et cetera. I think there's some interesting stylistic choices in this portion of the film.
It was an okay answer for, like I said, a question that didn't need answering.
Mm-hmm. And Paul Bettany in this film is another big one for me.
Oh my God, I loved him.
Yes.
Oh, he may be my favorite Star Wars villain.
He was, Dryden Voss is interesting. I do.
What a great name.
I do enjoy how, this is going to sound weird, but for blockbuster films, Paul Bettany dies in the summer. This is my favorite. Like, I do enjoy how much he is, how separate he is from Vision, right?
Yeah.
And, he's an actor. Of course he has range, but like, it is impressive how sinister he can be just in the way he says things.
Oh,
minimal
yeah.
makeup, minimal props.
And that the disarming charm that he has when he wants to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, I actually believe him getting, like, going from, like, being two completely different people where, you know, his face is normal colored to, you know, versus his eyes going bloodshot and his face turning red with the scars popping out and stuff like that. It was
yeah,
fun.
Yeah, yeah. It was very cool. I'd love to see a good cosplay of that going on. Things that I'm not super... We talked a little bit about LL3. I think she was a great addition to the cast. Very fun, light, amusing. I also thought that was a lot of fun addition was Beckett and his entire crew. Really enjoyed them. And now I'm going to start talking about things I don't like. I don't like how they got out of the story. I really felt like that threw me out of the story for a while. Not so much that they died in this dangerous mission, but that Beckett's reaction to it was almost immediately, well, how am I going to do the next mission? Including Solo, Han's reaction to it, Chewie's reaction. Everybody kind of reacted like, oh, that was a bum deal. These weren't people we were even remotely close to. What do we do next to get us out of this situation? If things were really dangerous for Beckett, and they were, that could have been heightened up of, I know we lost someone important, but we have to keep moving.
Mm-hmm.
That did not come across. It especially not for Beckett, who was in some sort of relationship with his team.
He was married to Thandie Newton's character.
So, yeah, it did not, I did not get that impression.
No.
Yeah.
They were written off way too quick.
Ultimately, I feel like it was indicative of Beckett's character, right?
I
feel like, you know, that he doesn't really care too much. But at the time, and for the majority of the film, at least half the film, I was just like, why are they not addressing this?
I feel like he would have probably attempted to put on more of a face, even if he didn't care.
Yeah, yeah.
Ultimately,
that's also a good point. He would have faked tears, crocodile tears, so that it would
he's smart enough to know that people expect you to be shaken up.
And that makes it even weirder when the revolution that the gang, that the other criminal gang that's looking to rob the train while they're robbing it, who is responsible for killing all these characters,
mm-hmm.
turn out to be like the rebels, the good guys. Never addressed in the film at all that literally just to get the fuel, which of course will probably save thousands or millions of lives, ended up killing a bunch of people.
Well, I mean, honestly, it's not that shocking to me in terms of how we've seen the rebellion behave before. To their way of thinking, Beckett and his crew are, you know, stormtroopers.
I think,
you know, they're working for the people working for the Empire.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think we've never had before these newest Star Wars movies. Arguably, maybe the dawn of the prequels, we start seeing that. But we've never had it from the perspective of the Empire, of people in the Empire. There's a reason why they're robot people, right?
Yeah.
I mean, actually, growing up, I think I did think stormtroopers were robots. I didn't think they were people.
It's a fair
thought.
I don't
know how I understood. Like, they took the uniform off a stormtrooper, but I never really thought about it as a kid. Yeah, and this is the first time where, you know, we were seeing things largely from the perspective of the other side. And seeing the rebellion act so callous to people, and there being no consequences to these characters, not even like a moment of, we regret what we did. But we had to. As far as I know, there wasn't really that. It was a little bit of...
There's a little hint of that on that wherever.
Planet. Yeah, the
not Kessel.
The refinery planet, yeah.
I agree, not enough.
Thorn on my side, I don't feel like Rio got enough screen time. You know, the original four-armed pilot dude?
Yeah, exactly. I love that guy, and he was literally killed.
Yeah.
Killed almost just to give an excuse for Han to pilot.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Would have been nice to have more of him, but...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think they played that death for the heartstrings. Like, oh, you like this guy? We're killing him. Anything could happen.
Right. I think for me, one of my last little thing, maybe we should even segue into some into some Easter eggs at this
point. You say, can we talk about Easter eggs, please?
Yeah, so Warwick Davis in this film, which is more than just an Easter egg, because Warwick Davis, of course, infamously as a young child, was in Return of the Jedi as one of the Ewoks. He was also in Phantom Menace as the character he's playing in this. Warwick Davis is playing Weasel in this, which is the character who's like setting up the speeder thing in Phantom Menace. He's in that splash scene. Yeah, so it's actually canonically the same character, which is ridiculous.
Yeah, because Warwick Davis has been in every Star Wars movie since Jedi. And Anthony Daniels also got a cameo role as well.
Anthony Daniels has been in every.
It's like Anthony
Star Wars
Daniels movie. Is now but the only person to have been in all
I did
Star
not,
Wars movies.
I did not see C-3PO in this. Where was he?
He was the character of Tack, who was enslaved with Chewbacca.
Oh, so he was actually playing like a real person? I'm surprised they didn't put him in the C-3PO outfit and then underneath that another costume. That's interesting. That's a nice little thing.
They probably did.
That's a nice little thing.
I have an interesting one. Clint Howard. Did you notice him?
Oh, yes. How can you not notice Clint Howard?
Clint Howard running the droid fights. His character's name was interesting. He's named Rolla Keeley, which I don't know. They haven't revealed any relationship yet, but I'd be very surprised if he's not related to Mala Keeley, who was the Rancor Keeper for Jabba.
Very nice.
So he essentially ran Rancor fights.
I would say you're digging deep there, but having watched this movie and all of the Easter eggs, I realized they were literally going for every reference they could.
Pretty much.
So I'm assuming, yes, it is 100% true.
Let's get bullet time references.
Alrighty, cool. All right, I already referenced C-3PO says, I don't know where your ship learned to communicate the first time he was on the Millennium Falcon.
That's right. C-3PO is like, understand. Your ship has a weird accent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's hear. L337 was talking about going to Black Spire, which is actually the new Walt Disney World place that they're building for Galaxy's Edge.
Oh.
The VCX-100 mentioned by Han is the ship from Star Wars Rebels.
Aren't you the guy who killed Aura Singh?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And there's like 100 book references that I don't know because I haven't read any of the book, but the Viper droids from Empire.
Oh, were they there?
Yeah. They were the ones that killed Thani Newton's character.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry, yeah.
They mentioned Scarif while they were talking about places to heist.
My absolute favorite one, when Kira takes out the vizier or whatever on the slave planet. What do you call that? That was Taras Kassi. Taras Kassi is the Star Wars martial art.
Ah.
That was introduced in Star Wars Masters of Taras Kassi for the PlayStation 1.
Yes.
Right, yeah, yeah. Chewie ripped off the arms of a guy, as is mentioned in the original Star Wars.
Finally.
Yeah. Beckett dressed up the same way Lando did from Return of the Jedi when they were saving Han.
Yeah, they had that costume, I guess, in the back.
Lando, I hate you. Han, I know.
Good one.
The mythical bet for the Millennium Falcon, which you talked about. Lando says, mining colonies are the worst. And of course, he heads up the gas mining colony of Cloud City.
Yep.
The Mandalorian armor in Beckett's, or not Beckett's, the bad guy. His name's
Voss.
Yeah, in Voss's office. Mandalorian armor, which, as we know, are Jango and Boba Fett.
Yeah, yeah.
The idol from Raiders of the Lost Ark and the Crystal Skull from Crystal Skull are also in Voss's office.
I don't believe that's true. I think it just happens to be, well, I'll give it to you just in case.
I need a screenshot.
The Kessel Run happened.
Of course. Yes.
Mimbom actually is the original planet that they were going to use in Star Wars because there was an original idea that there was a swamp planet and Chewie was supposed to like carry Princess Leia a lot, and then they ended up having, you know, Chewie kind of couldn't carry her, so that they completely changed the entire plot. So that was the original plot of Star Wars 4. Yeah. And the last one I have on my list is alluding to Han's future working for Jabba.
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah,
that had a really big gangster that has
I have
a
really good feeling about this. You know what? It was a little on the money, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Is this the first Star Wars movie that no one had a bad feeling?
I don't think it's the first one no one had a bad feeling, but it was, I think.
The only other possibility is Rogue One.
Right, right.
And I can't remember if anybody said that in Rogue One.
I can't remember either. But here's a big thing that I would like to address, the end of the film. So the twist at the end of the film, which I don't think was the entire, like, the fulcrum of the movie, but it was of interest, was that fact that Kira was working with a person who was running the Crimson Dawn, none other than Darth Maul.
Mm-hmm.
Now, anybody here not know that Darth Maul was still alive from other sources of Star Wars?
I did know.
Yeah, as did I.
I always forget it. And
yeah, I've heard it. I've not seen the television series that explain how he came back. But when I saw him, I was very impressed. I'm very impressed. That's too much. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it for the Easter egg it was. I was like, oh, that's cool. I didn't think they would ever acknowledge something like that from the prequels. I hadn't noticed. Yeah.
I knew Warwick Davis. Bring him back.
Yeah, it was interesting. I really did appreciate it for a little bit of a hint at what it was. But there is a bigger question here. For me, it was when this film doesn't hit, I think when it doesn't hit, partially it doesn't hit because of the prequel vibe. And what I mean by that is there is a certain element in the original prequel trilogy, not Rogue One, but the original prequels, that felt predetermined. Everything was established beforehand. We knew how things were going to go. And I could see how that might be less interesting to some people. I suspect that one of the reasons why this movie didn't make as much money in theaters, maybe it was the marketing, maybe it was the Star Wars fatigue. But for me, my worry was that this, more so than Rogue One, which took part with characters we've never had experience with before, this was the closest prequel movie we've gotten from Disney's Star Wars. I mean, effectively, it is. It is. It takes place before A New Hope. It takes place with characters we've already known, but in a new way with new actors and new presentation. I think that's what people were afraid of, and I kind of understand it.
Yeah, I can appreciate that. I think that was the biggest danger in this movie, was are people going to accept characters that they already know? I think it might have been a mistake to do Solo as the first real experiment with this. I think if they had gone ahead with one of the original plans, which I think they are going ahead with now, and done a Boba Fett movie.
Mm.
I mean, Boba Fett is a character that everybody knows. But we don't really know anything about him.
We know a little bit from the prequels, but barely anything.
Yeah, and we don't even really know what his face looks like.
Right.
I mean, we can assume from the prequels that he looks like Django.
Right.
But, you know, we didn't know anything about him. We don't know anything about his real character.
Yeah, literally, I believe he has 10 lines in the whole of the Star Wars saga.
Right, wow, that seems like a lot.
Yeah. I don't know.
And one of them's, Dad, Tonwee's here.
I think the other question becomes, in terms of why this film wasn't as well received, is this a consequence of The Last Jedi? And I think it is. But not the way I've heard people describe it on the internet. I think a lot of people are saying, well, this is punishment for not being respectful for these legacy characters, these legendary characters. I understand that concept. To be honest, I was a little sad to see anything about Han Solo. I'm still hurt from Force Awakens of what happens to Han. I don't know if I want to see his happy-go-lucky origins or even his sad origins. It feels a little dark for me. I could understand the concept of people feeling this way. I just... I don't buy it. But I do think... first of all, I don't buy it on the premise. What do you guys agree, or do you think that they have some?
I don't think that argument holds any water at all, because if you're rationally thinking about anything, Han Solo dies,
mm-hmm.
Luke Skywalker dies, Princess Leia dies, Finn dies,
eventually,
everybody dies.
Right.
Just
do not
the fact
buy
that we
Pete's
know
children's book.
Just that we know now how it happened shouldn't make us enjoy his character or his adventures any less.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. I think that's a little wishful thinking when you're talking about a narrative with characters in it.
It might tinge it a bit bittersweet.
Mm.
But if you keep in mind that these characters, I mean, Han in Solo does not know how he's going to die.
Right.
Nobody knows how he's going to die when this movie takes place.
Yeah, but to be fair, a prequel story, this is still a story. And if you know a lot of what's going to end up happening to this character, a lot of the threats come away. Like, I at no point was worried about Han's safety in this film. It was made in such a way where I didn't have to.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you know, it's a question. I do think The Last Jedi does have an effect on it. I think the effect is how close the movies came out. I think Like, I'm not quite ready to handle another Star Wars movie yet. 6 months mm-hmm. after the last one, I wasn't equipped. I wasn't equipped for this summer to have another movie.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I walked out of The Last Jedi, saw the Solo poster on the wall, and I was like, oh, wow, that's coming out in June. That feels... Is that right?
Yeah. Really?
Yeah, it felt real quick, but you gotta it's not that bad, and it's got to... I mean, they got to do it. They got to release it at some point.
Yeah, no, I get it. I'm not saying that it was a bad idea. I'm just saying that if anything explains it to me... Part of it is maybe not selling the movie right. Part of it is the prequel fear. But a lot of it is just another movie, another one so quickly. And then especially in, like you said, this summer, which was jam-packed with movies.
Yeah.
But we'll see. Let's see if Marvel's Ant-Man and the Wasp has the same issue when it's proximity, much closer proximity to the Infinity War. I think it's going to actually do very well because people are going to be like, please, give me something. Give me something after the tragedy that was the last one. Oh, man.
I need my fix.
Yes.
Then we're semi-used to Marvel movies coming out closer together.
Right, right.
And you know, as much as it's all the same universe, they are kind of standalone amongst it. You know,
right, right.
Yeah.
So final words on Solo. Is this watch it in theaters, rent it, or avoid it? I think it's probably a pretty fair metric to go.
I'm saying there's so many layers to this movie, and there's just so much you can see. I would see it in the movies and see it at home and watch it a few more times just to see if I could pick up on everything.
Yeah, I think it may benefit from repeated viewings. I can see that.
I think that there's so many things to criticize about this movie, but they're mostly to do with outside things. When it was released, how it's affected by other Star Wars movies. But the movie itself is good. Mm-hmm. It's a good, fun movie. Go out and see it, because they should be encouraged to make more movies like this.
Yeah. Yes, I would agree. I think kind of unsurprisingly here, despite the maybe some negative press, I think it was a great film. I definitely think it's worth seeing in theaters. I would even go as far as to say it's worth seeing in like a big, like an IMAX theater if you could see. It seems like it's pretty, like it's a film you kind of want to be engulfed with for certain scenes, especially the train robbery and the daring, dashing escapes. There's enough that come out where I think visually you'll be satisfied. So yeah, I think this is pretty good. I'd be happy if there wasn't another Han Solo film, but honestly, if they produced another one, especially now that they've pulled that band-aid off, I would watch it. I think it would be pretty good. I'd like to see these characters play again.
I want to see a Lando and Han buddy movie.
I definitely want to see more interaction from some of those characters, especially Lando. I'd like to see more Lando and Chewie. I think that he was great.
Yeah.
And I'd actually like to see a little bit, even if it's kind of especially if it's unrelated, Kira, the Crimson Dawn. I'd like to see them being pulled into the narrative one more time. I there's a lot to digest in this film.
Boba Fett's got to work for somebody.
That's right. Now, if you want to work for no one, you can work for Non-Pro. This is a very bad segue. I'm actually just asking you to rate and review our podcast. I just didn't want to say the same sentence over and over again. Rank and review our podcast. It really does help spread the word about this wonderful thing that we do, that we hope you enjoy. You can find out more about everything we do at our website on non-productive.com, and we will see you in theaters for the next big film that's coming out. I think we actually, the next film we might review is Ant-Man and the Wasp. It's coming close. Or maybe we will do Deadpool 2.
Deadpan 2?
Deadpan 2.
That sounds Deadpool good too.
Excellent.
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.